Hello, once again to Three Blakes No Clue, 30th of June. Speaking to you through your earwaves is myself, Clayton. I'm joined here with the usual suspects, Philip Kimber.
Mate.
The man who makes Chunk from the Goonies look like Brad Pitt. How are you, Phil?
I'm great, mate.
I mean, outside of the fact that you've got a very sharp haircut, that's
yeah, I do.
Quite
got
good.
Got a sick fade, hasn't it?
Sick fade, a sick and a little fade. Bit of a cut in. It looks quite well. How are you, mate? You well?
Yeah, no, going well, mate. Thank you for asking.
Very good. And sitting to my left is the human Q-tip with a little bit of grey dust on top. Jeremy, Mr. Wharf, how are you, mate?
Oh, I think a little bit of grey dust is putting it mildly.
Look, I was being nice to both you and Philip.
Plenty of grey dust there.
Yeah, very good. We're here once again to review the round that was, so we'll get straight into it, boys. Jeremy, once again, has done a sterling job. This is 3 weeks in a row now, I think.
It's starting to become a habit, isn't it?
Some research. You're going to get a fellowship at Deakin University if you keep it up, I reckon, mate.
My word.
Sydney versus the Western Bulldogs, Jess. Let's have a chat about that.
We're going to say this a few times over the course of reviewing this round.
Yes.
The term
As he shuffles his papers,
yes.
The term low-scoring affair.
Low-scoring affair.
This is going to be a common theme.
Kind of like me on Tinder, mate. A low-scoring affair.
Very good.
Very nice. Very sharp, Philip.
Very good, but usually after that, there's not 44 blokes getting fucked, is it?
No.
So, yeah, low-scoring affair. Sydney with just a mere 37 points for the night.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to get it done in most
I don't think it would.
Games, is it? Probably not even going to get it done in an AFLW game, just quietly.
Just quietly, I reckon you're correct, mate.
No, I only really paid passing interest in this game. I did tune in for a little bit of it. But as we're going to... As we're going to go along in this pod, just people's willingness to actually sit down and watch four quarters footy these days is
it's waning. It is waning, isn't it? Yes,
it is. Yeah,
reasons for that, which we'll get into. But all we ever hear is Phil's boy and Clay's boy.
Jess hasn't got a boy. Who is your boy, Jess?
I can confirm now.
You need to remedy that situation.
That I do have a boy.
You do have a boy. Who's your boy, Jess?
My boy is the sleek running ruckman from the Western Bulldogs. The big blonde haired.
Mr. English.
Mr. Tim English.
Yeah, but he's a different sort of ruckman, isn't he? He's not really a typical kind of build for a ruckman.
He really impressed me on Friday night. He really impressed me. And not his tap work or anything.
No. Because I was going to say Sydney absolutely dominated the hit-outs, but that doesn't
He runs
much.
Around. He runs around like any midfielder.
Yeah, he's an extra midfielder.
He is an extra
Kicked
midfielder.
Kicked a goal as well. Your boy. I was going to say my boy, but your boy.
And one of the Sydney ruckmen, was it Naismith, done his knee?
Yeah, which was unfortunate. A shame that.
Callum Sinclair trying to run with Tim English for four quarters is a bit of comedy.
It's kind of like me and my Tinder game at the moment. It's just not
going to
happen.
No, Callum. Callum Sinclair was actually out there playing. You're not even taking the field these days.
I'm not taking the field.
But yes, they've taken quite a liking to Tim.
22 disposals at 82% for a ruckman. Kicked a goal as well. You'd say that's a very, very good game for a ruckman.
And he's only going to get better.
Your boy.
He's only in his third year of football.
I thought you were going to say he's only in his 30s.
Well, if it's his boy, let's drill him a bit here. If he's your boy, how old is he, mate? Don't go to your phone. How old do you think Tim English is, mate?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Is the honest answer.
Just give me a guess, mate.
I would say maybe 21.
21?
21.
He's 23 in August this year.
23 in August.
Still got a long time.
He's still got a long way to go.
Big amount of footy.
When we think Gorney is 27, 28, and he probably didn't come.
Ruckman.
They do take a while. Brodie Grundy being the exception.
Ruckman and key forwards generally take a long
time. Yeah, the bigger boys. Key position in ruckman. I reckon he played a really good game, mate. I can see why he is your boy. His tap work still could be worked on, but when you're 23...
And you can run like a gazelle.
Run like a gazelle and go forward and clunk a few marks and kick a goal as well. That's an area of his game that it can improve on, is his tap work. But if he's mobile and can run around the ground, you've got an extra... I guess, an extra midfielder, that's what we're all harping on about now, that the ruckman now seem to, they need to be able to run as well and be, I guess, an extra midfielder that if they do lose the hit out, they can somewhat create a contest in the middle around a stoppage and things like that. And he seems to be ticking all the boxes at the moment. So good luck to him. That's a very good selection for your first my boy.
When you consider it, I would say Nick Nat. I won't put him in this category. But when you consider it, Mark Witsard is very similar.
I could say that when I got my first boy, I was beaming like. and we move on.
Very good.
The inside 50s were even.
Yes.
The Swans just struggled to score.
Except for my boy,
yes, your
Mr. Papley, 4-2. The Swans quite literally would have been absolutely embarrassed.
They would have been stuffed without him.
Yep.
Boys, Papley is probably going to go. There was talk about him going to Carlton last year. It may be a foregone conclusion that he's going to Carlton at the end of this year. Outside of Papley, and I know Isaac Heaney didn't have a great game on the weekend, outside of Papley and Heaney, who else, if you were Sydney's coach, you would feel confident in that you were going to be able to get a couple of goals from them week in, week out? Because I can't think of any other blokes. I asked my dad this, who's a blood supporter. You would expect
if Buddy Franklin was healthy, he'd be kicking at least two goals a game.
But he's always bloody injured at the moment.
Yeah.
So they don't really play Heaney deep forward.
They don't, no.
I think looking at Sydney's list, one thing that I'd do if I was coaching Sydney, and I'm not a coach's arsehole, and I don't know anything about the AFL pass being just the average punter, but I would suggest that they need to start rotating some of those midfielders through high half forward and sneaking forward. You see teams that do it all the time. The Geelongs and the Hawthorns have their midfielders and wingmen sneak forward and kick goals. And you see those smaller forwards or those smaller hybrid midfielders coming through and kicking goals for them, because at the moment, Phil, to your point, they've really got no one to stand up there. As you said, Buddy's always injured, and that's through no fault of his own. That's not putting him under any ill-due distress.
Right at this very moment, they've got a stopgap at full forward called Hayden McLean.
Who?
Exactly. Yeah. So he was their lead out full forward for the game.
Yeah.
So clearly he's a young fella, and you would think that he probably wouldn't be getting a game if Buddy was playing.
No, he'd be in Buddy's position, would be come straight into that. So enough of that game.
It's a big thing for Sydney to finish up on that. They need to find a way to score forward of centre.
Moving on to GWS Collingwood. This wasn't actually a bad game. You probably had two very competitive sides. Collingwood, they're probably...
the prelim rematch, wasn't it?
The prelim rematch. I would go as far as saying, personally myself at the moment, there's one Victorian side at the moment that could probably win the flag this year, and it's this mob here, the Collingwood Football Club. They played a really, really good brand of footy. They obviously didn't get the win, but
Sometimes you just have a bad matchup, don't you?
You do. And the fact that Howe went down, I really think hurt them
immensely.
Structurally.
I think it's going to hurt them later on down the track as well.
Correct.
So I wanted to touch on Howe going down. In seasons gone by, I can't remember a player that's been in such stellar form after struggling for a good period of time and reinventing himself as a defender.
As we're talking about Jeremy Howe.
And to see him go down the way that he went, I'm pretty sure it's confirmed PCL and MCL, so we won't see him again this year.
No.
Even if the season goes till December, we won't see him again this year.
No.
To see Howe go down like that, I looked at it, and I've done a knee in a somewhat similar circuit.
They're not supposed to go sideways, are they?
No.
They're not, no.
And there are some absolutely, and I'm going to use it, some intellectual nobodies out there.
Oh, you've used it. That's only one,
yeah,
Phil.
Yeah, that's one.
Jumping on social media suggesting that there was something untowards in it that's sliding in.
No, that's silly.
Let me suggest something to you. If you're one of those people, I think you need to sit back and learn a little bit about the game of football, because if you're going to seriously sit there and suggest that there was something untowards or deliberate in the injury that Jeremy Howe sustained, in the conduct of the second player involved?
Correct.
You don't know anything about footy?
No, 100%. No. It was unfortunate. And, you know, we discussed Howie last week, mate. And you know, you're winding me up because obviously he's a former D's player.
He deserved a shout-out.
And I'm going to say it is sad to see him go down the way he did, because I would say that he's probably Collingwood's most important player at the moment. He's out for this season, but we've got to realise as well, and it's not an ACL, so it won't be a full 12 months, you'd think. But you've got to feel sorry for the Naismiths in the house that are doing injuries now. Basically, at the moment, being June 30, we'd probably be, say, what, around round 15 of a normal season. So if all is well, next year, around 2021 season, it's going to be a normal season, 22 rounds, things like that. if Blakes are getting injured now and they're blowing out knees, you could almost throw him off for next year as well, because it's going to be a full year, and then they need to come back, rehab, spend a couple of weeks in the VFL and things like that, get match fitness. So it's really unfortunate for blokes that are going down with big injuries at the moment, because it could potentially cost them all of next season as well.
And it's important. It's interesting that you say that, because I had a look at this. Jeremy Howe's 29, so he's no spring chicken. And
no.
I'm not suggesting that he's got no football left in front of him. I'd love to see him get back out on the park again. What I'm trying to get at is the odds are going to be up against him to get A, get back and be effective, and B, recover the all-Australian form that he was in before he retires or before his body gives up on him.
My question to you is, mate, what is Jeremy Howe's biggest weapon?
I think his ability to read the ball is probably his biggest weapon. He's one of the better ball readers that you see. He positions himself on the ground quite well. And second to that is his speed. He's actually quite fast. If you look at him closing distances, he is quite fast. How fast do you think he's going to be coming off a PCL and MCL, Rico?
This is what I bring up. Myself, besides reading the play, I think his ability to mark the ball, and we know he's a bit of a highlight reel with his speckies and intercept marking. I know it's only first. It's his first knee injury.
That's a big one.
But it's a big one, and it could affect his ability to
get off the deck.
Yeah, get off the deck and jump at the ball like he once did.
Yep.
Now, if that is affected, and we hope that it's not, and we're only spitballing here, that's huge, because Collingwood rely on that. Basically, once he went down, the tide sort of turned for Collingwood. It hurt them. They didn't have another option to help him defensively.
Mm.
As you so rightly noted here, mate, GWS were a terrible matchup for the Pies. It was only highlighted when Howe went down, because they lost a defender. I just hope that he can get back to his, like you said, to his best form, and the knee injury hasn't hindered his ability to run and jump at the ball, because he's beautiful to watch.
And noting his last year's prelim, when Grundy dominated the ruck, but GWS were able to shark him, and
there's
a pretty similar story here.
It was, mate, and it's unfortunate. I don't want to take anything away from Brady Grundy, because him and Max Gawn are probably the two best ruckmen in the competition. Then you've got your Rowan Marshalls and the like underneath that. But we've seen it before with Melbourne. Maxi Gawn can dominate the hitouts, but Melbourne still lose. It's a case for Collingwood. It doesn't matter if Brady Grundy has 10 hitouts, 20 hitouts, 70 hitouts, like he did in that GWS game. If your opposition's reading the ball better than his own midfielders, and they're getting clearances and they're getting it out, then him winning the hitouts is a little bit redundant. And I think, just like Gawney and the Melbourne midfielders letting Gawney down, I think a few times on Friday night, the Collingwood midfielders let Brady Grundy down a bit, because I thought he was hitting it to all the right spots. I just think that GWS, to their credit, were reading it a lot better than your Pendlebury's and the Goey's and the like.
That's quite interesting. I often sit there and watch ruck contests and watch, midfielders set up to receive service from their ruckman.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been a few games, I can't recall them off the top of my head, but I have seen some and noted a few games where opposition midfields will go, yep, I know he's going to tap there, I'll be there first.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes
it's a
tactic. Sometimes they've got an opposite number in, the team whose ruckman is tapping the ball down to, contend with. And other times it's just a clear, the term sharking, as you use, comes to mind. It's just a clear snaffling of that ball and taking it to advantage. So we talk about hitouts, and then we talk about hitouts to advantage. Well, you can have 45 hitouts, but if five of them are to advantage, what the fuck are we even doing there?
Correct.
Anyway, on to the next game. Port versus West Coast at Metricon Stadium, the home game for Port Adelaide. And West Coast look sick and tired of being in the Gold Coast, don't they?
They do a little bit.
I just don't think they've got a good hookup for a deer on the Gold Coast, which is strange.
Ben Cousins Farms is
on the Gold Coast. A club like that would have pretty good connections.
You would have thought.
But there are other teams up on the Gold Coast too. West Coast aren't the only ones.
That's right.
They're just one of the, I suppose, higher touted premiership fancies, that's all. And
They were.
Now, everyone's a little bit surprised about their, lack of fervour, Philip, would you say?
My concern with the West Coast Eagles is, and I've potted them for a long time, I don't really rate Adam Simpson as a coach. We discussed this last year. They're 1-3 at the moment. Now, they beat Melbourne round one. In my opinion, they didn't beat them convincingly. I think Melbourne's lack of class around the ball hurt them a great deal.
I think in that game that West Coast got out to a 5-goal lead, they pretty much just held sway.
That's correct. The last three games they've played, they've been absolutely putrid. Now, in a shortened season, being only 17 games, I know they've got six, seven home games coming up. But the way the season's going, what is stopping? They're not going to have the crowd behind them now. Or maybe they will because, you know, WA government.
Not
the same. What's stopping a West Coast losing to a Melbourne, Hawthorne, Geelong, Sydney, whoever over there? This whole season's been turned on its head. And I think mentally they've just sooked it up that they've had to go be on this coast. Gold Coast, the opposite coast.
Yeah.
And it's cost them those three games that they played. They could have easily at least won two of those.
The players hear that from their footy manager, from their coach.
Correct.
And that's going to be in their minds.
100%. And Adam Simpson come out and has said, oh, you know, I probably shouldn't have come out and publicly said, oh, we think it's a load of shit. Too little too late, mate. You already have. So if you've got the top dog, the coach coming out and saying it's bullshit, clearly, the players in the club are thinking that too, for the coach to come out and say it.
Yeah.
So mentally, they're just, I don't really think their head's in the game, and we all know that footy's 90% above the shoulders, and it's costing them dearly when it comes to the win-loss column.
Now, enough about West Coast.
We're on to another one of Clay's boys.
We're on to the big forward in Charlie Dixon.
Hoi, hoi, hoi.
Port Adelaide just slotting 6-2 casually straight through the big six.
Yes.
Now, he's got some mitts on him, this fella. He often looks like he can just stick his mitts out and catch the sun, this bloke. He is a very exciting player to watch. And look, I will tell the truth, it's taken some time for Charlie to hit his straps, but geez, those straps were worth hitting, weren't they? He is fantastic to watch. So coming out with 6 goals, 2, big Charlie, well done, keep it up. Love watching you do your stuff. Port Adelaide, though, I mean, we spoke about it last week, who have they really played? Well, once again, they play West Coast, and yes, you can only play who's in front of you, but they're still embarrassing sides that they go up against.
They are.
It'd be very interesting to see them play a Brisbane, which coincidentally is coming up very soon.
Yeah.
And just see if they can hold that momentum. So that was the Port and the West Coast game. Moving along to the St Kilda-Richmond game.
Whoa.
Now,
bit of a turn up, wasn't it?
I'm feeling a mini bake here. I'm feeling a mini bake here.
Do we give him one more chance?
We do, but I'm not going to bake the Richmond Football Club chance. Not like you thought I was.
No, is this an individual bake?
This is it's very much a collective bake.
I see.
Richmond Football Club and your 70,000 pet members.
He loves bringing that up.
Oh, yeah. How many Dobermans?
I thought you're only allowed to have 5 dogs on a domestic.
They've got a couple of Shih Tzus.
A couple of Maltese Shih Tzus. Chihuahuas.
Yeah.
What I'm getting at is we've heard for the last 3 years that Richmond are up and about. It's a dynasty, and they're going to be forced to contend with. And then all of a sudden,
who was telling us this? Wait, was this a consensus?
I think the main.
Who was saying? Was it Richmond supporters?
Yeah, the Kevin Richmond Bartlett. Supporters. But there was a main fella by the name. His name rhymes with Manuel Mischer. G'day, D Fish. Hello. Good to hear from you, mate. On Facebook, as always. It's quite funny when you consider that Richmond were going to create this huge dynasty and win 4 flags in a row. And I think KB said they could win 5 in a row or something. I thought, hang on, you've been on the Bolivian booger sugar a little bit too long.
Yeah, we know. KB's been on the kerosene bars for quite some time, hasn't he?
I'm going to say this. Richmond fans were long suffering for a long time. And since they won, every other prick's been suffering.
So it's
good to see that they're starting to fall back in the pack again. And I mean,
are they falling back in the pack or are the Saints...
Or the alternate view is, are they just victims of 2020 COVID season like a lot of other sides seem to be?
Because they don't have 20 out of 22 games.
I've heard a few players come out during the week with the excuse that, maybe we're just used to having such a large crowd there and that's why we don't play as hard, which I think is bullshit.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think so, Philip?
Personally, myself, and I'm not any... by any stretch of the imagination, an elite athlete. I think
that's for sure. I don't think anyone here could lay claim that, mate.
But I think when I have played sport, I definitely like to have people there G me up, and it sort of gets me up a little bit. So to a certain extent, I think some players that may play on instinct and things like that, that are entertainers, right? Yeah. So like I'm trying to think of maybe a Sydney Stack or a
Sydney Stack will get to him.
Yeah. They might prefer to play in front of a crowd, and when they snag a goal, it gets them up and about when they see people cheering for them and, you know, thinking they're the best thing since last
week. I think the 2017 flag was probably played on emotion.
Yeah. The thing I find interesting with Richmond is it may get worse for them because Trent Cotchin, who's obviously the captain, if you live under a rock, has come out and said, you know, they've got blokes with partners that are expecting children, a few other things. They may not move to a hub. So some of these players might go, you know what, fuck it, I'm out. I'm not going to move up to Gold Coast for a month. I'm not going to move up to Adelaide or whatever.
And you couldn't hate them for it.
Just pause that thought for a sec, boys, because I was scrolling through Seven News on my phone.
Yep. Oh, we've got breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Now at 7:22 on the 30th of June.
Breaking news, Clay. I'm liking this.
The AFL confirmed the inquiry to 7news.com.au on Tuesday night. We're looking at a reported breach of COVID rules, a league spokesman said. The Age has identified the players involved as star midfielder Steele Sidebottom, who is at the centre of the AFL investigation, and veteran defender Lyndon Dunn.
Oof.
The AFL has shown it is willing to suspend players for even mild breaches of the protocols in place to protect the game from an outbreak. No further news as to what it was, but they're just alleging alleged breaches of the AFL's coronavirus protocol. So Jesus. By the time this episode goes to air, we should have a little bit more information on that, you would hope. But very interesting. But sorry, back to your point. Yes, players going to hubs and wives and families.
And they don't want to. A part of me goes, you know what? I get it. If I had a baby on the way, I'd want to be here for the birth and things like that. The other side of me goes, why are you more important than the other clubs that are doing this at the moment? Because I guarantee the West Coast Eagle players, the Fremantle players, Adelaide, Port Adelaide players, they would have wives expecting shit going on in their personal lives.
I think an entire Gold Coast hotel would have been set aside just for Tim Kelly's family.
Yeah, well, correct. I could see Koch's point of view, but I just think that is a bit poor if you have a handful of players that go, no, we're not going to go to a hub, because to me, I can just see them being chastised.
They'll be ostracised by the greater public
in
general.
And it's not going to help Richmond's cause at all.
No, it certainly won't. One interesting thing that came out when people were talking about when the ideas of hubs were floated a few weeks ago, or more than a few weeks ago now, was people were coming out. There was two trains of thought that I saw, and this is all through socials. The first train of thought was, you entitled, overprivileged, overpaid fuckwit, you can't put aside 4 weeks or 6 weeks of your life to go play football, which is what you're paid to do. Mm-hmm. People in the army, you know, get deployed and go overseas, and people do this, people do that.
Tennis players.
The second side of me went, yeah, that's right, but they sign up for that job.
Yeah.
Tennis players know they need to tour the world. ADF personnel know that they could be deployed at the drop of a hat. So it's very different. So I've got a foot in both camps.
Yeah, 100% me too.
I'm with you. If we were expecting and there was any sort of complication or anything whatsoever, we'd have a really serious discussion around, you know, should I go, should I not?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the second part of that would come into the conversation around, you're getting paid $500,000 to play a 6-month season of footy, and you've got to be away for 4 weeks for the betterment of your game, the club, and club's finances and the league's finances in general.
Yeah, we've spent a bit too much time on Richmond here. I think there might be supporters out there that might be a bit miffed as why we're not giving St Kilda some credit.
Well, they do deserve credit, but...
that hurt you to say, didn't it? I saw his jaw locked in then, as much as because he's eating pizza.
Oh, that was pleasing for me to watch. I don't mind watching Richmond lose. I was quite happy to do so.
Shout out to Gav.
Former Richmond player Dan Butler tore him a new one.
And my boy.
Your boy?
No, I was going to say my oh my, and then I got confused. Didn't he love it when he snagged a goal or did something nice?
He loved it, didn't he?
But you know what? It's nice to see St Kilda do something. I just hope that they can continue to look like
they stand for something there, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't go that far just yet.
Not quite, but the interesting thing, and we spoke about it last week, is some of their imports are starting to stand up and earn their wage. Mm. I mean, Hanbury was probably unlucky in the fact that he copped a lot of criticism for an injury that was through no fault of his own. But at the same time, he's a high-profile recruit that came over St Kilda, and members and supporters expected something from him. And now he's finally delivering that.
Yeah, last thing. Do you think tactically Richmond have got figured out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there's a certain style of play which does work for a few years, and teams and coaches just try and create a method to negate it.
It's well documented. The club
and this is true of any successful team in a few-year period.
Example, and you're probably going to bash me for talking about Hawthorn yet again in another game, but the most recent example is the Clarko's cluster.
Correct. Yeah.
They used to guard space. No one did that. They were always man on man. Now Clarko decided to guard space and create opportunities. Yeah. And they got found out, and they couldn't win games against very average sides because they employed the same tactics or counter tactics. So I think Richmond have probably found out as well.
Okay, moving on. Gold Coast and Freo, Matty Rowell and others. He's got another three votes, I reckon.
Now, did we have a vote, or did we have a lucky dip as to who gets to call him his boy?
You got to call him your boy, mate. Much to my disgust, but
I got it in first, did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm happy to take that one.
Mm.
I'll take that. He's a bull. He's an absolute.
What player. I like about Matt Rowell, and being a long-suffering D's fan, I've been watching TAC Cup football for a long time too, because I'm like, oh, that's the bloke that Melbourne's going to kill his career when it gets drafted early. Matt Rowell has been doing this for years and years and years and years and years. And then the Gold Coast have basically identified him as pick one. The Gold Coast are very clever and said, he's got a very close friend in Noah Anderson. Can you please give us pick one and two? Because we think this guy's going to be like most kids.
Very shrewd.
And, you know, bugger off in 2 years. To his credit, he signed 2 weeks ago, as we discussed, a 2-year contract extension with the Gold Coast Football Club. I think if you have a look at his body of work since he's been drafted to the club, him showing a sign of faith to the club and signing a 2-year extension on his contract is probably the biggest news that's come out of that club. I would say it's even bigger news than when they recruited Gary Ablett. Only because
he's 18 for a start.
The fact that he's 18,
yeah.
Gary only went up. Let's be real. Gary went up there because he pretty much had already done everything at Geelong, and Gold Coast offered him a king's ransom
and the captaincy, which is
they drove a dump truck of money up to his house.
And, where you've got this kid
and said, "Come and live on the beautiful Gold Coast
with your brother as well."
Oh, I would have gone. My wife would have had my
and basically they gave his brother Nathan a gig as well.
That's right.
But Rouse, like you said, 18, he's got his whole career ahead of him. He's definitely going to be the captain of that club one day.
Suggesting that he's going to stay there.
I reckon he will, mate.
Well, if the club keeps tracking upwards.
Yeah.
It is early days.
Yeah.
It is early days. I'd love to see him stay there and Gold Coast actually become successful.
And gee whiz, like when's the last time we've seen a bloke play 4 or 5 games we could say – he's going to end up with a Brownlow, at least one Brownlow around his neck as well.
This is the thing, right? There's comparisons, and Chris Scott came out and said, I can see shades of Selwood and Chris Judd in this fella. But even two champion players in Selwood and Chris Judd, no one actually said after 4 games this bloke's going to win a Brownlow. They just said this bloke's got something going for him.
Yeah.
Whereas it's very different. I actually, and yeah, you can't compare.
Bookmakers have him like 4th favourite for the Brownlow now.
He was I'm pretty sure Brownlow and Rising Star multi, I saw it was 2001 to 1. So if you had to put $1 on him at the start of the season,
you would have won $2,000.
$2,000.
If it gets 3, but yeah. Unfortunately for Freo, things don't get better for Freo. It's not that they're uncompetitive. They're thereabouts. So Gold Coast didn't embarrass them per se. But they lose their most important player in that 5 to a hamstring. So you're probably looking at about 5-6 weeks there. Best case scenario. That's best case.
Best case scenario.
So that's best case. And that takes him to, round 11 or 12. They're in a bit of trouble because they've only got Sonny Walters now. Nat Fife is their captain. He's basically been the bloke that's been dragging them across the line. Like we've said multiple times on this podcast this season, it's left up to too few with Freo, being Walters and Fife, and now they've lost arguably their greatest player. That's
maybe you'd be foolhardy. You'd be foolhardy to tip against them.
You could be, mate, but you know what? I think in a season like this, this is now time for Justin Longmuir to get around the boys and go to your Cherries, your Brayshaws, blokes like that. It's time for you to stand up and be counted. We've lost our leader. He's arguably our best player. But it's time for you to stand up. So, give me something. Yeah, Show me a response.
This would create opportunity.
It would.
Okay, so that's a question. And you've named a couple of players there.
Yep.
Leads me to a question I've just thought of right now.
Yep.
Nat Fife retires tomorrow and says, I've had enough. Mm-hmm. Who's the Fremantle captain going forward in the long run? Who there seems to have leadership abilities and can lead from the front and drag the team over the line? I don't see anyone sticking out for mine.
I wouldn't say Walters.
Only Walters. But how old is he?
I don't think Walters is captain material. Who would I have as
maybe
captain?
Maybe Luke Ryan.
There you go. There's a bit of a leadership void there as well, really, isn't there? That's a very good question, mate.
The team with kids is going
to
be...
Walters is 29. It's just something that struck me then. Who has Fremantle got in terms of upcoming leaders?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question.
You can't name four people off the top of your head. Yeah, no. We don't even know who's in the Fremantle leadership group off the top of their heads.
No. Okay. No, they're a bit of a...
Another question. Is that a product of them being all the way over there and not here in Melbourne?
No, because I tell you what, some of the best talent to come out of I'll give you a name, Patrick Cripps, WA boy.
No, what I'm saying is do we not know who's in the leadership group or who's an upcoming leader because they're a Fremantle side, because they're not in the big media as much?
Maybe they're not in the big media as much because they're not worthy.
But you know what? West Coast have been a very successful side the last two or three years, and we don't really hear much about them either. Right. So I think that's a very good point, Clay. If I asked you now who's in the Collingwood Richmond leadership group, Carlton even, we'd probably be able to reel them off, or at least a couple.
That's a fair idea.
Yeah. Fremantle, yeah, they are a bit of an enigma in that respect. And
I'll tell you who's not in the Collingwood leadership group. Jordan, Mr. Liar,
Do you think the Suns can keep it up, boys?
I don't think they can win week after week after week. No.
Okay. If we have
who they got this week?
If we have in
right? Geelong and Geelong. So there you go. We'll find out, won't we?
We will.
We will.
If we have in South Australia,
yeah.
Gold Coast can't do it. I'm a big believer in the fact that Gold Coast are playing some really good looking footy at the moment.
Yeah.
But they've also played in the Gold Coast. They haven't really.
They haven't left. Have they?
That's right. I mean that for a young side is a big thing, I think.
They've got some pretty low-hanging fruit with West Coast being in their hub and Adelaide and at the Adelaide Footy Club.
Taking nothing away from them.
No.
The answer to your question, Phil, is I don't think they can keep up the same brand of football that they've played in the last few weeks. I think they might be able to be competitive in thereabouts.
Yep.
I don't think they're going to keep producing the same brand of football week in, week out.
Now, it's been a Matthew Rowe loving for, the better part of a month here. 20 disposals and 2 goals. It's a good return, but it's not like it's a great return for a kid of his age. But if we had Danger coming out only getting 20 touches, or Fife only coming in getting 20 touches, we'd be like they've got to lift a little bit.
I think that's different because they've set the expectation.
Correct. For him, it's great. For him, it's fantastic. But let's just hope that they do not rely on an 18-year-old to get them through the rest of the season. They've got some good young kids there, but...
We could always go back on the old Mark Rusciuto adage that only numbers count.
Fuck you, Rudy.
We're not going to dwell on this, but I just want to make one point to what you just said then, Phil.
Yeah, mate.
If a team is relying on an 18-year-old debutant season player in dragging them up from the bottom, they've got more problems than they've got positives.
Correct. Which I don't think Gold Coast have, but time will tell to see how they travel. Carlton Essendon, mate, I want to take the ball on this because it was a great game to watch. It was close. It was a seesawing match, which you like. You do not want to watch blowouts, and especially when you've got two traditional rivals going at it for 120 minutes, granted, or 180 minutes, whatever the game is now. There was times where Carlton fell behind the eight ball a little bit and our boy Woody wrote them off. Shout out to you, Woody.
Very good. Pretty sure it was three-quarter time.
Three-quarter time.
Status was, it's all over.
It's all over. Essendon will run out of the top of this.
The siren, it was never in doubt. I love your work, Woody. Well,
but it was a great game. And for inaccuracy, the Blues should have probably put them to bed. So as like you said last week against the Cats, mate, the Blues were the better team for the better part of the night. I think it would have been a bit of a shame if Townsend had to kick that goal and snatch the win. Because I think, again, Carlton deserved the win. And
there
we know
there were instances there where Carlton could have put themselves up by 4 or 5 goals.
Correct.
And killed the
and again, we know how much I hate Carlton. So it pains me to heap praise on them. But it was really great to see them get another close win, grind it out, hang on. Cunningham's behind. Eddie Betts's 50-metre penalty was bullshit, in my opinion, but we will not go there. The fact that seven of the top eight possession getters were blue baggers, I think, says a lot about Carlton.
And Big Levi is...
Big Levi, clunk and marks. He's definitely earning his paycheck. Tip and Woody went missing for Essendon. But the thing that I thoroughly enjoyed at the moment, and this is a big fuck you as I stick my finger up to all Essendon fans out there, this just goes to show the culture of that club. And it's Rich coming from a Melbourne fan, because I know a few of you intellectual nobodies will say that. But when Ben Rutten has
That's Rich coming from a Melbourne fan, mate.
Sorry, I felt like that's what you needed to go on. But when Ben Rutten, your coach of the night, has a shit-eating grin on his face thinking the game's won when Jacob Townsend marks that ball, nothing pleased me more when Jacob fucking Townsend, GWS and Richmond reject, ooh, couldn't kick the ball more than 40 fucking metres. Bang! Phil goes bang!
I don't know if that was fair on Jacob Townsend, just quietly.
So when you're a key forward...
No, not the fact that... He didn't kick the goal.
Why? Because he's a GWS and Richmond reject.
Yeah.
Do you know what pick Richmond got him from GWS, mate? Tell us. 120 something it was. So clearly GWS rated him. And I don't know how he got to Essendon. I think he was a supplement, like a pre-season supplement player.
A top-up player.
And yeah. Essendon all know about fucking top-up players, don't you?
When I
seen Ben Rutten smiling like that, it is okay. And it wasn't the fact that he was smiling. Like, he might have been. But at the... To me, it looked like he goes, yeah, we got this in the bag. It showed no respect. Like, it's okay to get up and about and excited, but when you're the senior coach of a football club and the grin you had on your face was a shit-eating grin.
I would love nothing for the truck to be sitting here in front of Phil while he pots him out, because I don't think he would be that positive and that comfortable.
I would be, because he's the senior coach of an AFL football club, so he wouldn't do anything to me.
I mean, here in your house where there's nothing where he could flog the shit out of you.
Because we're on a podcast, mate, so they'd hear the thuds.
We got pizzas here.
One thing I wanted to mention out of that game that's very poor to see is there's a young fellow that can play some good football. He's being touted as a future leader of the club. He's in an acting captain role whilst Dyson Heppel is off injured. Zach Merritt.
Yep.
We've seen two ill-disciplined acts by Zach. One, which was a jack. Now, let me, before anyone jumps down my throat, looking at you, Woody, before anyone jumps down my throat and says, yeah, but what he did was, it happens 100 times in a game, I completely agree. That little love tap on Silvani Grips, completely agree, happens 100 times a game, and yes, they penalise the action and not the result and not the action. I get it. I totally understand that. But I want to highlight that this young fellow has been given the acting captaincy reins, and not only has he gone ahead and pulled Nick Nat's hair over the boundary line, which is a highly televised and criticised incident, he's then gone out, and his response to having hit Silvani in the ribs was, oh, well.
Yeah.
That is not what you want. And yes, he's a young fella, but that's not what you want from your acting captain, a vice captain, someone in the leadership group. This kid can play, and he needs to actually understand that his actions have consequences,
100%.
And they draw criticisms from the wider community. And what I'd really like to see is Zach Merritt come out and just go to town, go to work, and play football and be the contributor, the solid contributor that he is. So it's quite disappointing to see him be involved in a couple of high-profile incidents whilst he's not only got the acting captaincy armband on at the moment, but can still play. He can play football. He doesn't need to.
He's a very, very good footballer.
We can only hope he gets his act together, but, I don't give a fuck because fuck it.
Brisbane Adelaide.
We talked about this duo last week, Philip.
We did.
They're back at it again.
We did. I believe Brisbane were my sure thing.
They're back at it again. However, they did have a few blemishes on their record, didn't they?
Oh, my God, mate. This is going to be a mini-bake. Mini pay crop. 10-23.
Against Adelaide.
10 goals, 23, boys!
No.
How in today's age of professional football when we've got sports scientists and time trials and everything. Like, apparently the players have never been fitter. They've never been better. The spectacle's fantastic. They've never
been more rested.
Rested. How can you kick 10 goals, 23, and Hugh McLuggage and Lachie Neal kicking one goal, 11, between the both of them? Now, may I add, there was a poor bastard that put a multi on.
Yes.
Now, the odds were at 2001. He put $10 on it. He had every line of that multi ticked off. Nine-league multi. His last leg, Lachie Neal to be an anytime goal scorer. Lachie Neal cost this bloke 20 grand.
I saw something on, and I think I showed you blokes, something by Lachie Neal saying.
About the beers, yeah.
From what I understand, a few of you guys have me in your multis to kick a goal. I think I owe a few years of beer. And then I'm not sure who it was, but one of Lachie's teammates jumped on there and said, well, in my estimation, 0 goals, 6 equals a goal, so fuck it, you don't know anyone.
Probably Mitchie Robinson, so my boy.
It'd be very nice if Sportsbet ponied up, and if anyone from Sportsbet is listening, and I highly doubt they are, but if you are, pony up and pay the man.
Yeah.
He technically kicked a
goal.
The sum of a goal. Six.
But this is the thing. We know Adelaide's still garbage, lads. We discussed this ad nauseum last week.
He's had intellectual nobodies,
and ad nauseum,
which I tried to take.
Yeah.
He's had ad nauseum. There's one more he hasn't busted out yet.
Yeah.
And you haven't busted out your signature yet.
Yeah.
I'm playing my cards very close.
I'm
going to
bust
chest
out this one now. Legit. Adelaide are taking the P155.
Oh, there it is.
We got it.
They're taking the P155 because I tell you what, if that was 23-10 instead of 10-23.
So what, even if it was 14-19 or something, Jesus.
16-3, whatever. Whatever.
That maths doesn't work. But yeah,
no, whatever. shit. And maths is normally my strong suit.
Yeah, I know.
So I've let myself down.
You're in trouble when
Mr. Muniandi.
When this dumb prick here.
Yeah. Old simpleton over here. Yeah. A beautiful mind. I'm going to start to call you.
I've got English words and grammar and spelling. You've got numbers.
Yeah.
And Jeremy's.
I've got Tim English.
Stuff. Yeah. I was going to say stuff.
But there's still. I don't want it to be another bake, but there's still. Like, when you lose to Port in a showdown. And then you lose to Gold Coast. And if you take away Gold Coast's current form.
Point number two there, Philip.
Yeah. Exactly. Imagine if it was 23-10 and not 10-23. And it could have easily been that. Like, if you take away 1-11, so if we turn that to 23, it could have been 34-1. Yeah. No, that doesn't work out. Sorry.
There you go, then, mate.
Oh, no, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. It could have been, 21-12 or something like that. Yeah. That would have been disgraceful. I'm at a loss with Adelaide. Like, this is a club that's, you know, the first line of their theme song is, we're the pride of South Australia, we're the mighty Adelaide Crows, courageous, stronger and faster. Let's break that down. Are they the pride of South Australia at the moment?
Absolutely not.
No? We're the mighty Adelaide Crows. They're not mighty. They're not courageous, stronger, faster. And you know what? They're definitely not respected by their fucking foes because Gold Coast, Port Adelaide and Brisbane have now bullied them. I mean, they've absolutely bullied them.
Well, you got to remember that. It's 1, 2 and 3.
Correct.
They've played them. And by virtue of playing them, they are 1, 2 and 3 in some part. But I guess I agree with you. A team looks at their draw and says, oh, well, their fluid draw at the moment, their daily changing draw at the moment, says, yeah, we've got Adelaide. Your beauty.
Correct.
Let's go rest some players.
But if you're Adelaide, at the start of the year, if you're Adelaide and you looked at Gold Coast, would you have gone, we've got that in the bag?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I don't think there's a team out there that wouldn't
and
have said.
Exactly as well with Port Adelaide. Like, let's be real, Port Adelaide, we're probably a sneaky chance here as well. As I said last week, I feel sorry for Matthew Nix because I reckon he's taken on a poison chalice here. I think they haven't put the right people around Matthew Nix, I don't think.
No, they haven't.
And because of that, that poor bastard's probably going to be sacked in a year, 2 years.
Could that be because of some arrogance by a particular board member?
Yeah, particular board member, the Bogan himself. Yeah, it's just really disappointing to see because they are a very proud football club, but they're anything but at the moment.
Moving on to the doldrums. The
blockbuster match, 14th between 15th.
Do we have to talk about this?
There was one time when there was a Melbourne-Geelong game where it was just all one-way traffic, and I believe that was down at GM.
It was. I was there.
And they said LGBTQI.
187, the Melbourne fans call it, when we lost by 187.
That was a far, the weekend's game was a far cry from that.
It was. That game. The game where Gorney announced himself on Corian Rod's 300th and Melbourne had a sneaky win it.
So we're talking about, obviously, four goals to half time between two teams.
Melbourne and Geelong, yeah.
Melbourne and Geelong.
Geelong had a clear tactic when they got the ball at half back just to chip it around and slowly chip it up the field, make the Melbourne defenders chase blokes and run around.
Here's a question. Are coaches more concerned with having goals scored on them than scoring goals themselves?
Yeah, they're more concerned with having goals scored against them.
It's like coaches are thinking, I couldn't possibly let the opposition take the ball to their forward 50, which is fine. That's not your goal. But they're doing it at the expense of moving the ball to their own forward 50. Mm-hmm. Coaches this year, and we've said this and we've spoken about it to several people online and all sorts of stuff, coaches this year seem to be more worried about having points scored on them than what they are by scoring points.
It makes
for ugly, awful viewing.
They're there to do a job, and sometimes their jobs are on tenuous.
That's if you've got a decent coach.
So that's a good point. Okay, so Chris Scott came out and said that he thinks it's the responsibility of the coaches to create a spectacle for people to watch. I agree with that. But I also agree with your point, which is their job is to win premiership points. Now, I had an exchange with someone on Facebook that said the 2008 grand final was probably the ugliest grand final to see, and the season that Hawthorn played was probably the ugliest football that he's seen in the modern day era because of the way they played it. Because they were too worried about having the opposition score a goal, so they'd kick it through the opposition's goal post for a behind.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw that. And the rules were changed. Yeah, exactly.
And the fact they're holding the ball, incorrect disposal's gone out
the whole
window.
Thing, yes. Yeah. And we'll get onto that later. But what I'm getting at here is bad-looking footy still wins premiership points, but is it the right look for the game? Is that where we want the game to go?
It's entertainment. We want people to watch it.
And if it's not
Phil and I would have been forgiven for going out and doing some gardening during the game 100%. On Sunday and then coming back in and watching the last couple of minutes. I'll ask you, Phil.
Yeah, mate.
Had Melbourne got up, would you have felt fantastic about it?
I wouldn't have felt fantastic about it. This whole season to me, I'm thinking it's a bit of a nothing season.
Yeah.
Do I still get frustrated when the boys...
Look at this game in isolation.
Yeah. Do I still get frustrated when the boys make a mistake like they did plenty of on Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon, sorry. Sunday afternoon. Absolutely. But I wouldn't have got excited had they have gotten up because, quite frankly, I think both clubs should have... there's got to be a winner in a game or at least a draw.
Yeah.
To me, neither of those teams deserved any points on the weekend, but I would have been happy for a draw because the thing that frustrated me was, mate, is Geelong are better than that. I think if Geelong had have played the way that they normally do,
You mean the way they played for 15 minutes against Carlton?
Correct. They could have carved us up. In saying that, if Melbourne played their best footy, I think they could have given Geelong a red hot go, hence why I tipped them as my upset last week. The thing that frustrated me was, and this, you know, we're talking about coaches. I'm starting to get a little bit concerned about Goodwin's coaching ability or lack thereof. So if Chris Scott has a clear mandate that we will, from halfback, hold the ball up until one of the Melbourne defenders breaks down or they lose concentration, we can get in our 50 and hopefully score a goal, and Melbourne is still zoning off, they're not manning up, there's an easy way to stop players from chipping the ball around. That's manning up. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah,
if you're going to bloke, if you're going to bloke so far up your ass, you could excuse them being a vanquilatrous act. It's going to make it harder to have uncontested marks. Melbourne didn't do that. They just kept playing into Geelong's hands, I felt. And then at times when Melbourne could, and this was very limited, when Melbourne got the game on where they'd move the ball quickly and get through all of Geelong's shit and get it inside 50, they remotely look dangerous. I'm not saying they look dangerous, but you go...
They look like they could score.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, that was good that you got it, say, from Hibbard to Tomlinson to Fritch. And fuck you, Tomlinson, because you got 19 disposals instead of 20. It cost me my multi.
In the bin with you, Tomlinson.
Yeah, but Geelong, and it was just such a dire game. It was boring.
I tend to look at my emotions after the game.
Yeah.
And normally I'm like, yeah, Geelong won, or I'll sing the song, I'll That game finished, I'm like, yeah, fuck you. I just turned around.
I turned it off and started playing FIFA, mate.
Yeah.
In fact, about 5 minutes before the game finished, I had it on my iPad next to me and started playing FIFA. Getting Portsmouth out of League One on FIFA in manager mode was more important to me than because that game was just boring as
out of garbage. Shit.
Out of garbage.
And don't tell us it's not the coaches.
Now, Clay, you want to discuss something about Patrick Dangerfield's theatrics. So I'll give you the floor, and then I want to give you a bit of a rebuttal, mate. So you fire away.
Danger's one of your anti-boys.
I've thought about this, and I'm not going to jump down the microphone like I suggested to you.
No, that's fair.
Are you going to be a bit more measured, mate?
I'm just going to say what I've said all along, that star players disappoint me when they
flop
and do things that they don't need to do.
Yeah.
We go back to it and we say that, you know, flopping for your team if it gets them a goal or whatever, great, you did the team thing. But honestly, like, is that in the spirit of the game?
Yeah, it's not.
We talk about, you know, 10-metre diving platform players like Alex Rance.
Yeah.
And I saw in the Hawthorn game, I saw Ben Brown flop himself forward faster than a rabbit that's been shot in the last quarter as well.
Yep.
So it's not just Danger. It's not just Joel. I've seen Luke Hodge take a couple of drops.
It's competition-wide.
So what are you saying is, Clay, is these players are that good, why are they resorting to these sorts of...
Well, we know why they're doing it, to give their teams an advantage. And if they get away with it, they go, you beauty, no worries. And what happened was Dangerfield flopped on the wing. And then he got a 50-metre penalty, and he kicked it to Darcy Fort, and Darcy Fort gold, and subsequently Geelong won by less than a goal. Technically, had that not happened, I know a whole bunch of stuff has to go in, you know, right for, you know, the game to be affected. But technically had that not happened, Melbourne would have won the game. I'm not going to launch into it. They're my thoughts. We've been through it a million times. I was fucking ropeable when I saw it because I thought it was just a disgusting look for the game, and I don't like it. And that's it.
Thank you. My rebuttal is all the Melbourne fans that said that cost us a game, you got no fucking clue. You are intellectual nobodies because there was a stage in the second or third quarter where outside 50, I can't remember who had the ball, and they let Danger just come in, get the handball, do what he does best, bomb it straight down the gut through a goal. That's what cost us the game.
Yeah.
Defensive lapses like that. When are Melbourne going to learn, boys? So that defensively, you're rubbish.
We talk about this in every game. No one particular mistake or event costs anyone a game. No, that's not that's correct. That's not what I'm saying. But when you look at that and you analyse that one Oscar performance that was put on, it clearly led to a goal.
You know what? I'm going to say that it was lost at the selection table again. How Jetta didn't get a game. How Lockhart got a game over Jetta. Stephen May, you're on fucking notice too. Defensively.
I bet you he's real worried.
Oh, yeah. I'll break his jaw, Campbell Brown style. Yeah.
Moving on to the Hawks.
Hawks North, yeah. Good game this. Really good game.
And it ended up being quite good.
It was, yeah. In the last quarter,
didn't it? I enjoyed the first three.
Yes. Well, the
How's Hawks, the heart, mate?
Well, the Hawks looked like they just had it. The Hawks just like they had them on toast the entire game.
I actually have a theory on this. I've said it to a few people, and my darling wife out there, Erica, she can't bear to watch close games. And quarter time, we're up 31 points. Three quarter time, up 31 points. She goes, "You beauty, we got this in the bag." She pissed off to the home room, went and did her thing, came back in with about 10 minutes to go. She goes, "How are we going? Are we 50 points up yet?" I'm like, "We're a goal in front." And she's like, "Are you oh, God." And she just high-tailed. She couldn't do it. She can't do it.
It's not good for her.
No, not good for her heart. But I actually have a theory as to why we fell away in the fourth quarter. And this is taking nothing away from North Melbourne. But the midfield brigade were gassed. You watched in the third quarter. There was a period of play there where North Melbourne just kept getting the ball, and Hawthorn's defensive pressure was fantastic, and they were manic, and it was a good 8 minutes, and you saw the same players running to space, tackling, flooding back, you know, manning up. And I actually saw Tom Mitchell at the resumption of the game in the fourth quarter, and he, even after the quarter time break, he was blowing hard.
He was gassed.
They were absolutely gassed. And I think in part, and taking nothing away from North Melbourne, I think in part what helped them was better fitness than the Hawthorn midfield brigade, because it just looked like They
ran in the last quarter, it was going one way. It was one-way traffic.
One-way traffic.
Yeah.
100%.
It was one-way traffic. And could that be cause for the AFL to maybe say, if we just lessen the interchanges a little bit more, we might start to see a bit better flowing footy?
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, you can experiment.
Something's got to be done. If we get another Melbourne Geelong, I don't know what
I want to bring up prior opportunity, guys, because in my opinion, I don't really think it's being penalised as much.
So all the instances in this game, there could have been
heaps. Multitude.
There's two here. There's prior opportunity and incorrect disposal. One goes hand in hand, and the other doesn't necessarily.
Because in my opinion, if you get the ball and you've had we'll say 2-3 seconds, because in the scheme of things, so if you've got the ball and you can go assess an option and you don't handball or kick, if you get pinged, in my opinion, that should be prior opportunity. I even seen a few times in the Geelong Melbourne game, incorrect disposal, how a bloke can go like that, drop the ball, miss it with his foot, and it's play on.
Because he attempted to get rid of it, but then it is incorrect disposal.
It's incorrect disposal.
And we see this, right? So we talk about players like Dustin Martin who can stand up in a tackle.
Yeah.
Spins 7-20 and then gets the handball away with a tackler hanging onto his waist for 5 seconds and it's not prior opportunity.
Mm.
Yeah, he got the ball away, but how fucking long does he get to get the ball away? It's as simple. You talk about NRL, a game that I don't really follow much, but I've watched a little bit. The runner's taken to the ground. When the runner has his feet taken out from him, that's it. You're done. The ball's reset.
I don't want to hear Clarko moaning about the tackling count and saying that's bad for the spectacle of the game, and he reckons that's why the game might loosen up a bit. I'm sorry, Clarko. You're part of the problem, and that's why we're having a congested game in the first place. Yeah. As Dennis Pagan would say, Philip,
yes,
do not piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
Yeah.
Clarko is part of the problem, I'll admit that. But
not him personally.
Game style.
I still think that the umpires have a lot to speak for, answer for, I should say, around not paying incorrect disposal as one and prior opportunity as a second. Mm. Yeah, I'm not saying that umpires need to be perfect.
Clarko had a point.
Yeah. But he also needs to accept some responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that his point's not valid, though.
No.
Yeah.
It would be nice for him to come out, though, and say, I understand that, you know, I'm part of the problem and I've caused it through my coaching and my play style.
I just wanted to come out and say another club shit again like he did with Geelong.
That's not what he said. He said they're not really
They're not that good.
They were tested by Melbourne. They were beaten by Carlton. There we go. So he was fucking right. They were beaten by
Carlton at home. Just quickly, Riley O'Brien's tackle on Jared Lyons.
Yep.
Two arms pinned, head into the ground, just got a fine. Am I missing something? Did they not change the rules?
He should have been suspended for the tackle because, in my opinion, it's a dangerous
tackle.
Didn't
they change the rules for that? Didn't they say, by the way, if we do a tackle like that now and both arms are pinned, it's going to be a suspension?
It wasn't even both arms. It was arm.
He took a bloke and dumped him to the ground.
We're dealing with Michael Christian here, mate. It's not the most smartest cookie in the jar.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael Christian. You should spend more time not satiating your former players, as you're supposed to have an understanding for, and more time just worrying about the actual result of an MRP result.
Correct.
And the wellness of the players on the field.
What do you know about consistency, Mr. Christian? What do you know about consistency?
We've never had consistency in the match review panel.
Gentlemen.
Players' corner. Now we've just gone. We're almost up to an hour, so I'm loving this.
Let me paint a picture. Phil and I have no idea what is going on here. This is Clay's corner. He said this is his bit. He's going to do it. We have no idea.
All I will say is, mate, I guarantee it'll be better than your movie review that you brought to the table. But I'm not too sure if it'll be as good as Tindalicious. Yeah, but we'll find out.
I reckon, no offence, and this is probably the harshest thing to say, but I can't think of anything better. Being diagnosed with cancer is probably more fucking entertaining than movie reviews. So before we get into it... That was pretty harsh, actually. I'm sorry. Before we get into it, Philip.
Yeah, mate.
You had a guess as to what Clay's corner would be.
Yeah.
Would you like to share with the listeners as to what you think it is?
I thought it was you trying to get us to get all pissed off about the Melbourne Geelong game, mate.
Nope. No. Jeremy, do you have a guess or are you just going
to roll? I like to watch things unfold.
Okay, all right.
So this is, what's this called? Clay's Corner.
This is Clay's Corner. It's a new segment.
Is this an interactive corner?
It is an interactive corner.
Oh, I like this.
Basically, the way this works for the listeners and for yourselves, because as Jeremy says, first time you've heard it.
Yep.
I'm going to pose to you a question.
Yep.
I would like, and I will indicate to you whether I want just a yes or a no answer.
Yeah.
Or a yes or a no answer and a subsequent short explanation.
Nation why, okay.
Opinion.
Okay. All right. Yep.
So, Roger, the boys here haven't seen these questions. They didn't know I was making a list.
I have no idea.
Shout out to Daniel Fisher, Aaron Wood, and Braden Crocker.
Phil has no idea. He's looking at Snapchat.
for putting some of these questions to me, so thank you very much for your help. If this becomes a thing, we might actually throw it out to the wider Facebook group and ask for some questions. But here we go. I'll read them straight off. So, this is a yes or no question. No opinions required. Thank you very much.
Yes or no. Shout out to Cass D, by the way.
Shout out to Cass D.
Yeah, Cass D. G'day, Cass.
Flash.
Teenager Phil over here, yeah.
kicking backwards in the defensive half. Should it be play on? Yes or no, Philip?
Yes.
Jeremy?
Yes.
March to September. So, this is a one or the other question. Should we play 17 games at a regular length and every team plays each other, alternating the venue from year to year? Or, and these are the only two options you've got, no substitutions or alterations, or should we play 34 games at a shortened length, one game at each venue for each team per year? 17 or 34, boys?
34.
7.
Interesting.
Do you want an explanation?
Not for that one, no.
Okay.
I'll take an explanation for not this one coming, but the next one. So, currently it's 15 metres of ball needs to travel to be paid a mark. Would you be happy to move that to 20 metres instead of 15? So, for a mark to be paid, the ball has to travel 20 metres by feet.
Yeah,
I would. Yep, 100%.
Both yes for that?
Yep.
I'll take an explanation on this one. An extended bench to accommodate 6 players. One of the 6 can only be activated by permanently removing another player from the field. Treat it like a concussion sub. So you've got 5 on the interchange bench and one that can only come off if someone never returns to the field for that game.
No, don't agree.
Don't like it?
It's a war of attrition.
No, I don't like it. The game's been played with 4 on the bench since the dawn of time and clubs have managed.
That's not true. Game hasn't been played before.
There's 2 on the bench in the
game. It's been very different. It's recently changed.
Yeah.
The dawn of time being about 2000.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, I will rephrase that. I think from a traditional point of view, no. I'm not a fan of that.
Nope.
I'll take an opinion on this one as well. So stay at home forwards at every centre bounce or throughout the entire game, one member from each team must remain inside your attacking 50.
Yes, it should be like that anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, stay at home forwards for
stay
sure.
Stay at home forward. Yep. So
Hagen's paddock.
You must always, at every single second of game time, have a player stationed within your forward 50.
Yes.
Should that player remove themselves from the forward 50, it then becomes a free kick the opposite way on the 50.
What about the defender running off?
Nope, you still need to stay. If the defender chooses not to go into that defensive 50 and leave the forward by himself, he's a fucking idiot. But the forward can't leave.
Yeah,
no. We're both yeses on those?
Yeah, yes, because we would start to see the old days of Lockett, Carey.
One-on-ones in the 50.
One-on-ones.
I'll tell you what.
Or potentially two-on-ones in the 50.
Correct. I'll tell you what, key forwards would be even more required because trying to beat Jesse Hogan, Tom Hawkins, one-on-one, good luck with that. So, I love that idea.
Excellent. I'll take this one. Now, this one, I'm actually going to name this one. This is a Woody special. Should we limit rotations to 8 per team per quarter, equaling 32 rotations maximum per match?
Yes.
Yep.
So, we've gone from unlimited rotations, which we had in years gone by, to 80 maximum. To now per quarter cap. So you can have 80 rotations in a quarter if you want. But we're now applying an 8 per quarter cap and a much lower, less than half total match cap as well.
Yep.
8 per quarter and 32 per match.
Yep. Both 100%.
Talk us through why you think that would be a good idea.
Because everyone would win to say, oh, no, now we'll get injured. But no, hang on. You'll adjust and you'll just work smarter.
Mm. Well, all the teams adjusted when there was a concussion sub, didn't they?
Correct.
Yep. Phil, you got anything different to add on that one?
No, whatever you just said, mate, I back it up 100%. I like the idea of an 8 cap a quarter and 32 a match because what we're not going to see is when a fucking player kicks a brilliant goal and he's hot and he's on fire and they just pull him off for the sake of pulling him off, he's going to stay on the ground, which I think is great for the game.
Question for you then. let's just say, and this is a scenario, I should say.
Yep.
Let's say it's three-quarter time in the grand final, and it's, you know, Richmond and Collingwood, 40 points apiece, you know, pretty hotly contested game. You know, Dustin Martin pulls a hamstring, but Richmond have had their eight rotations, at three, you know, 5 minutes before three-quarter time, and they can't get someone else on the ground. They play with 17. That scenario comes up, what do? Do you say, okay, well, we're sticking with it? Or is there a provision for it? Or you just go, you know what, that's bad luck, stiff shit, every team's got the same restriction?
No, I think it's, you know, too bad. Nah, so bad. It's just bad luck.
Should they have just an injury just doesn't count as a sub?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. These are all spitballing questions.
Yeah, so, yeah. So an injury doesn't count as an interchange.
Well, if you've got your five on the bench.
But this is different.
Yeah, I know.
But then what do you determine as an injury? He can't go back on, or he goes down to the rooms. What's an injury?
Then a club might manipulate such a rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Another one, and this will invite some opinion from you boys, and we're getting to the end of these. There's only a handful more. Should off-field behaviour be taken into consideration when looking to induct a person into the AFL Hall of Fame? It's a very interesting question posed by D Fish.
Delicate, but no, their footy ability should be first and foremost.
Philip?
Yeah, I 100% agree. The AFL Hall of Fame, you should be looking at their achievements on an AFL field. Right? So Ben Cousins, clearly he had his issues. Sadly, Ben Cousins is a drug addict, okay? And he's probably going to die from drugs. He's a junkie. But that doesn't stop the fact that he was a champion footballer that played almost 300 games in league football, okay? That's what it should be based on, your football ability, not the fact that you took drugs, like Gary Ablett Sr. with that girl in the hotel room. What? So now we're just going to can the fact that Gary Ablett wasn't a champion footballer.
He was. Best players ever played the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No. So
I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I've got no stake in the game here. This is not my opinion piece. This is for you boys. I'll play devil's advocate. Let's just say Bob Smith becomes an AFL Hall of Famer. Bob Smith, you know, retired 10 years ago, kicked 500 goals in 100 games, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Becomes an AFL Hall of Famer, and then he's inducted into the Hall of Fame. 2 weeks later, cybercrimes goes through, finds out he's a part of a pedophile ring, and he's, you know, just a shit person all around. Does he keep his Hall of Fame status? Right. Or he's pending induction, and they go, yep, no worries, we're going to induct you, and then that happens. This is off-field stuff that I'm asking the question.
Really. Yeah.
It's very delicate, I understand that, but I'm playing devil's advocate.
I think in the WWE, in the wrestling, I don't think you'll find Chris Benoit being in the Hall of Fame.
Mr. I killed my wife and kid, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That's so you've got to draw a line somewhere. But
So depending on the severity of what you're saying, off-field indiscretions may play a part.
I don't think there's anyone in the AFL Hall of Fame who's a
not at all. What I'm saying is
to
a certain point, if there's maybe criminal implications, then that should have a bearing.
That should be treated on its merit.
Wayne Carey rooted a teammate's wife.
Yeah.
What's that got to do with his football?
Nothing.
I think so long you haven't committed a crime and you haven't been convicted of said crime, your eligibility to the AFL Hall of Fame or AFL legend status should still apply.
Ben Cousins is a convicted drug user. Does that change now that he's been convicted after he finished his career? This is all good stuff. This is really good content.
Yeah, no. If he has been convicted of a crime, then unfortunately
he's served jail time. Yeah. So should he not be a Hall of Famer just on that basis alone, or is it a case-by-case thing?
I think it needs to be a case-by-case. Like if you go to jail because you've had too many
speeding fines
and you're in jail for 30 days, that's obviously a lot different than killing your wife or kid or raping a child. So, yeah, obviously there's always going to – we can sit here till we're blue in the face, say, yeah, but there'll always be a court of a public opinion, I think, when it comes to inducting players into the AFL Hall of Fame.
That was a very dark question. We got in a very
deep.
Please, wash our mouths out. What are we doing?
I've got six more, and we'll run through these fairly quickly because I know we're getting over time.
Yeah, over time. Then we got a fan question.
Oh, look out! All right, beautiful. Do you hold a SANFL or a WAFL player, for example? And this is before the AFL was the AFL, so we're talking about the Premier League for you to play in was your state league. So the VFL existed. But if you lived in Perth and you stayed in Perth,
yep.
The highest league you could play in was the WAFL.
The WAFL, yep.
Do you hold an interstate player in the same esteem as you do a VFL player, a la Graham Corns? Is Graham Corns, as a CNFL player, held in just as much high esteem as a Polly Farmer?
I think Barry Robin is, isn't he?
Is he?
I think Barry Robin's a legend. Yeah.
I think they should, because prior to
the AFL.
The AFL. Mm. Obviously, it was the VFL. It was the Sandfall. It was the
Waffle.
Yeah, the Waffle, etc. Yeah, I think players from the Waffle and Sandfall should be held in the same esteem as a VFL player.
So the reason why this question was posed was it's very clear that the majority of the skilled players and teams were in the VFL when you compare them around the country.
Yeah.
So what I think what the question poser for this one was getting at was, if Jeremy played in the VFL and, you know, kicked 100 goals in a season, and Phil played in the Sandfall but kicked 100 goals in a season, are your 100 goals any more or less important than Jeremy's, who may have played on some better quality opposition? That's probably what he's getting at.
I think also my argument would be Polly Farmer was the captain of the Geelong Football Club and probably one of the greatest ruckmen we've ever seen, and then he went back home to WA.
Yeah, and there are a lot of good players that played in the Sandfall as well.
There was,
there was Peter Carey and Stephen Michael.
So we don't devalue them.
I don't think so.
Good answer. A couple more. Just this is a really basic one. Do you boys like the advantage rule, as in play on to advantage?
I don't think it should be whistled.
Okay. So if you're the umpire and I take a mark, and then I get clobbered in the back of the head, but on my way down I handball it to you, do you run into the 50?
They should just put their whistle to the mouth. If they don't see an advantage, then blow the whistle and bring it back.
Right. But they're calling advantage for the benefit of the player, though.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
So what's your problem with them blowing a whistle and calling advantage, though?
They should just use their voice, I think. Watch the player unfold is all I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Phil?
I like the
They do it in rugby and soccer. Yep.
I like the advantage rule. What I do not like is players taking advantage, realise they've fucked up, the umpire's called advantage, and then they do that and then wonder why they get pinged holding the ball.
Yep.
That's the player's own fault. I do
or
not have
the umpire going, yep, no worries, you took another 20 steps and then decided you didn't want to continue.
Yeah, and that's
I'm gonna allow you
the
to
onus on the umpire.
But you know what? It'll take probably about 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Some player will go back to the ump and say, why didn't you call advantage? They said, well, I did. And that will happen a few times, and then they'll start getting a rapport with each other.
Another one here. Should there be a 25-metre penalty for lesser incidents? So, for example, a lesser incident would be running through the protected space on a mark when you're following your defender, for example. Rather than a 50-metre penalty.
No. It's
too
complicated, too much shit.
Incidental contact when trying to spoil, like you've seen those times where a player's gone, I'm going to try and spoil this, and they're midair and they've gone, oh fuck, I'm not going to get to this, and they turn their body but they still give away a 50.
No,
should there be a 25?
Umpires have got enough going through their head,
Philip.
They don't need to decide whether something's 25 or 50.
Well, they can't even figure out whether balls have travelled 15 metres.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm with Jez. Let's keep it simple.
Last three. Are suspensions still being adjudicated with the result in mind rather than the action? And should they form part of the outcome? Should the injury that someone sustains add more or subtract weight from the penalty?
I think it should be a...
And are they actually still...
I think it should be a collective thing with the action.
If I go speeding down the highway at 140 k's an hour and I get done, I get a speeding ticket. But if I go speeding down the highway at 140 k's an hour and I subsequently hit someone and run them off the road, I've done the same thing but just hurt someone in the process. Whereas in this example, I didn't hurt someone with a dangerous tackle, so I got 2 weeks, but because I hurt him, I got 4 by doing the same
thing. Well, the idea of these things is to try to stamp them out of the game.
Yeah.
And if you're going to try and stamp them out of the game, you've got to rule on such things.
And so what's your ruling? Is it more about the action?
It's more about the action, isn't it?
It should be the action rather than the outcome.
But should the outcome then form part of an extra part of the
penalty? Oh, that should transform the amount of punishment in terms of weeks. Maybe.
Yeah, so if you sling tackle me to the ground but I don't get hurt, you get 2 weeks. But if I do get concussed, do you get 4 automatically? Or you've just done the same thing no matter whether I got hurt or not, you get 2?
No.
I think this is the thing. We've seen the outcome be penalised rather than the action. So for all sling tackles, okay, you should be suspended for a period of time. How you then work out the period of time is the injury that you have inflicted on that player.
So what you're saying is the outcome should help decide, not necessarily always decide the penalty. And that outcome could potentially add more weight to the potential penalty.
So we're penalising the action itself to sling tackle.
So you've got 2 weeks automatically, whether it's true or not. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
So the action itself is what you're being penalised for. How we're going to determine the penalty or the length of penalty is the outcome. Same as your example before.
As well as the outcome.
Yeah.
So you've got 2 weeks
correct.
Irrespective, but because he got knocked out, you've got an extra 2 weeks. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Because like you with your example before, if you're done doing 140 and 100 zone, you will get your $200 fine, whatever. You get your cast locked away for 30 days. If you have not been lucky enough for the poor unsuspecting victims shortly, not being pulled up by highway patrol, you're doing 140, 100 zone, you kill a family, obviously the penalty is going to be greater. We're not putting that person in jail for the outcome, we're putting them in jail for the action. The outcome has some bearing on
the outcome led to the action.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yeah.
That's good. Two more and then we'll fire into this fan question. Should time start when an umpire bounces or throws the ball in, or should it start when a ruckman taps the ball? So this was posed to me in terms of when an umpire bounces the ball, let's say there's 30 seconds to go, your team's 1 point down. So a bounce goes out, time starts as soon as the ball hits the ground, skews off, umpire resets and throws it up, you've lost 10 seconds. Your team's 1 point down in the grand final, you've got 30 seconds to try and score again. Umpire wastes 10 of your valuable game time by fucking up their bounce. Should time start, time on, start again when the ruckman touches the ball or when the umpire has their action?
Sounds like a reasonable idea to me.
Yeah. Mm. You're not opposed to it?
Not opposed to it at all.
Is it that big of a deal that it needs to be changed? Probably not.
No.
It could become a big deal, though.
Could.
Yep. I'm all for as soon as the ball is bounced, it's game on.
So Jez is when a ruckman taps it, and you're when it's bounced.
When it's bounced.
So irrespective of whether the umpire wastes 10 seconds resetting the ball, it's just shit happens.
Shit happens because, you know what, plenty of clubs and players chip the ball backwards for 10, 15 seconds to run down the clock. Okay, so if you haven't been good enough to be in front at that point in time, then that's your own shit luck.
Yep. The very last one is, should, I fucking hate this one, but I'm asking it because it was asked of me, should last touch out of bounds be implemented?
It should be trialled. That's pre-season, perhaps? That's why we have things like the pre-season.
I'm going to say yes, only because it's going to stop this deliberate out of bounds shit. Because that's it's so hard to adjudicate. Because basically, the thing that annoys me is
Mitch Duncan.
So the thing is, if I'm a forward line player, if I'm inside my 50, I can go. I'm a forward pocket, and I'm going up against a ruckman. There's no chance I'm probably going to beat that marking contest. So what I'll do is I'll deliberately punch it out inside my 50, deliberately. So I can then create a stoppage, hopefully get a goal out of it.
Well, you've gained 30 metres to
right? win a goal. So in my opinion, that should still be deliberate out of bounds but it's not, and I know the reasons why behind it. To me, then if I'm a small forward, I'm going up against a ruckman, I know, shit, I can't tap that ball out, what I'm going to need to use is my creativity. I'm better down on the ground, below the knees, my foot speed and things like that. So I'm all for last touch out of bounds because it'll definitely eradicate this whole blokes just smacking it out and then hopefully they're thinking that they're going to get away with a deliberate out of bounds.
Why do you want to see a trial? What do you want to see out of the trial? What's the outcome you want to get to?
Well, I want to see what it's like.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it.
Whether it influences the game in a positive or negative way. What would be a positive way for you?
It refrains a lot of players from going in that direction. Maybe have them going up the guts a lot more.
In a negative way?
A negative way that, it could end up costing teams
Premiership points.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Very good, boys. That was the very first players' corner. I know it was a little bit tedious. We probably won't have 15 questions next time.
we'll live and learn.
I think it created some really good discussion points.
It created really good discussion, and I will say it was better than the review.
I'll be honest, mate. I could have filmed myself taking a number two, and that would have been.
I've got a question here from one of our favourite real AFL Alliance.
Is this Mr. Capital L, capital C, lowercase H? Is that who we're talking about?
One of our favourite admins from the Real AFL Alliance.
I really need to get on the Alliance because I don't know what you guys...
have been saying for 3 weeks, mate.
Corey Barclay has had a question for me. Now, I'm just going to quote him. Is there a case for Port hosting the grand final if they make it? And what does the AFL do with the contract it has with the G? And as I can see... Massive potential injunction by the MCC if they will lose revenue, if another state wins out. What would it take to satisfy them if this eventuates?
Oh,
we went through this last week.
A little bit, yeah.
We did, in a little bit. My short answer for you, Corey, would be no one here at this table has the insight to be able to answer that question accurately. I'd like to be able to say I do, but I'm just not.
All I know is there's like another 40 years left on the MCC.
Yeah, 50 till 2051, I think. 2050,
yeah.
No one here at the table has the insight to answer your question accurately, Corey. But from my perspective, I've said it before, I'll say it again. And this is the Victorian in me coming out. People might hate this. The MCG is the home of football, and that's where grand final should be played, whether it's in front of 100,000 or zero people. That's my opinion.
In such time that it can't because the event's going on today.
So this is what we spoke about last week. Is there a clause in that contract? And this is why I'm alluding to the fact that no one here can answer that for me. Should there be a clause and the MCC and the MCG themselves, the governing body, allow it to happen or don't pursue legal action or something?
Surely the MCC would relent a little.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
The MCC might be able to, might say, all right, we want half of the take or 10% of the take, whatever.
Also, I'm going to put it to you, Corey. Why did you say that Port's hosting the grand final? Aren't you pretty bullish on the Eagles? That's just another matter for another time, Clay.
Philip, what was your take on that, mate?
Well, I've actually done a bit of research on this during the week, guys. Okay, because
that was very James Sicily of you there. Just look at his face; it was very old. Yes.
No, because obviously, when we were talking about it last week, I thought that I would discuss this.
Done a bit of a pivot there, mate.
Well, pretty much, the CEO of the Melbourne Cricket Club, Stuart Fox, basically said they'll exercise common sense when dealing with the AFL Grand Final. So basically, Stuart Fox, who obviously served as CEO of Hawthorn once upon a time, has said that, if something was to happen with the MCG, I believe you used the example last week, Clay, if terrorists blew up the MCG, then what would we do?
Yep.
Now, to correct you, it's until 2057. The new deal that the MCG has exclusive access to the AFL Grand Final. But basically, Stuart Fox, and I'm paraphrasing here because I didn't want to copy the whole article, but he said that they'll use common sense and basically they will not live and die by legal agreement. So pretty much if we have a situation where the MCG was unavailable for AFL Grand Final, the MCC would give the AFL its blessing to use another ground. So in answering Corey's question, I think then if that was the case, and only in this case, if for whatever reason, terrorist attack, COVID, mass outbreak of chlamydia, that, for whatever reason, the MCG is unavailable, whatever the
You haven't moved to Melbourne and hit lucky on Tinder, mate.
No.
Outbreak of chlamydia.
No, but the thing is, so whoever finishes highest on the table then, in this case, it'd be Port Adelaide. If they were lucky enough to make the grand final, it should be at Adelaide Oval. If it was an unknown, again, with commercial agreements and things like that, in my opinion, if Gold Coast finished top of the ladder, they made a grand final, it should be at Metricon. Brisbane, Gabba, SCG, and heaven forbid if it was GWS because we have it at a fucking Skoda Stadium, or, if it was one of the Giant Stadium, or if it was at a WA club, it'd be at Optus Stadium. Yeah.
Maybe we could trot down the highway and...
Correct. Or if it was Geelong, If it was Geelong and they could not, it'd be at LBHTQABC Smiles 1300 Penfold Stadium.
Pretty sure it's
Sleepy Hollow.
Pretty sure it's GGF Stadium.
Yeah, but in answering Corey's question, I think this year would be the perfect opportunity that, for whatever reason, the MCG was unavailable. Port still finished top of the ladder. They make the grand final. Should be played at Adelaide Oval, which I must say is a magnificent venue.
Not that you've had very happy memories there.
No, I've actually had every game I've gone to and watched there. They've won, whether it be against Port.
Yeah, boys, I do believe I'm first this week.
For the tips.
Oh, jeez, we're still going. Sorry, listeners.
We've rambled on for it. All right, let's go. I think St Kilda will beat Carlton. I think Carlton have been good, but they haven't been super. I think St Kilda are a bit more polished. My sure thing is for Collingwood to beat Essendon. Uh-huh. Essendon just aren't as good as Collingwood. I'm going to put it as simple as that. I think West Coast will get their first win. They'll beat the Swans.
Yep.
I think Geelong will handle the Gold Coast. At GMHBO, I actually think North Melbourne will beat the Bulldogs. Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty 50-50 that game, but I think North are made of a bit more sterner stuff. Brisbane to beat Port Adelaide just
game of the round.
Port are going really well. My upset is for the Crows to get their first win against a fifeless Adelaide.
Oh.
Is this where we go 17 to beat 18? That's not really the biggest upset.
Yeah,
when you consider how poorly Adelaide's been going.
You knew we were going to ask you this question, mate. Keep it moving.
Anyway, all right.
Keep it moving.
Richmond to beat Melbourne, and I think GWS to beat Hawthorn up there.
Filippo. Just to recap, your sure thing was Collingwood, Jez, and your upset was Adelaide. Yeah. Is that right?
Correct.
May I say that last week my sure thing was St Kilda. And they won, but my upset was Melbourne, and they lost. So I'm still at a 50% strike rate.
You and I are even pegging because I didn't get the Essendon.
No. So that's still a watch this space, and he's just like the trade period. Literally is three blokes no clue. It's one bloke no clue. But sorry to pot you there, mate. But Carlton St Kilda. Now Carlton St Kilda. Let me just. I do apologise here, listeners, because this pod's getting a bit longer.
Carlton, these are just tips, mate. There's no need to get into this sort of level of detail.
Oh, but I need to keep my sterling record up against you guys. At Marvel. Oh well, Jesus Christ, they both play well at Marvel. Fuck. I might go Carlton to roll St Kilda. I just think that they've been able to grind out a few wins, so I'll stay on the Carlton train. My sure thing – oh, no, it was your sure thing, sorry.
Collingwood, don't be taking my sure.
Sorry.
I've got your sure thing written down here.
I do. Collingwood, should account for Essendon quite easily, I think. I'll back in West Coast because I just don't know where Sydney's firepower is going to come from. My upset – is Gold Coast to beat Geelong. You gave me a shit-eating grin last week against Melbourne and we almost rolled you. Mate, I tell you what, your team's fucking putrid at the moment.
If we serve that up against
Gold Coast, then you can put all the time on Matthew Rao, but he'll still dominate your pussy asses. I will go to the Doggies to beat North Melbourne. Brisbane should account for Port Adelaide up there.
I got a little bit of rouse with that. Phil showed a bit of mongrel then.
Yeah. I'll back in Fremantle to beat Adelaide, only for the fact that it'll be up at a hub. I don't believe that one is at Adelaide Oval. My sure thing, and I do not know why I'm picking these. Oh, Jesus Christ, I'm going to cop it here. My sure thing is Melbourne to beat Richmond. Why am I doing that? I do not know. But, yeah, my sure thing is Melbourne to beat Richmond. I've just given myself one away there. And I think GWS will probably have a little bit too much class for Hawthorn.
Very good, very good. We'll roll through it very quickly and then we'll let you guys go, get off the line. I'm tipping Carlton to beat St Kilda. I'm tipping Collingwood to beat Essendon. Sydney, am I sure thing against West Coast? Because I like Sydney at the moment and I don't like West Coast, so fuck them. Gold Coast to beat Geelong because it would just nothing would make me happier. Honestly, it wouldn't. North Melbourne will account for the Bulldogs. I know the Bulldogs have had a bit of a resurgence of late, but North Melbourne showed a little bit more than what I expected from them in the last quarter. of the Hawthorn game. My upset will be for Brisbane, second on the ladder to beat Port Adelaide, first on the ladder.
You're going at me for going out and
all. Nah, he did. Listeners, he did check that with us before.
Nah, we did check.
Port Adelaide are undefeated, ladies and gentlemen. So technically, that should be an upset. Fremantle will account for the absolutely atrocious Tex Walker Spuds in Adelaide. Richmond will finally come back and win a game against Melbourne. And even though Luke Bruce has been confirmed out for 3 to 4 weeks with a fractured jaw and he's kicked 6 goals in 4 games, I still think Hawthorn. I'm going to back him in with my heart. No, maybe not my head.
Blind faith here, mate.
Blind faith, but fuck the plastic giants and Dale Ford, go get stuck.
That's it. We're going to sign off with Dave.
Very good. This was the round that was. Thank you very much for putting up with our slightly longer than normal podcast. Hopefully, Clay's Corner was interesting for you. Hopefully, the lack of Tindalicious exercise wasn't something that's going to, hamper your ability to sleep like it is with mine.
And I'm going to take us out with a number. We've all got boys now.
Yes, we do.
We've joined the club, so we're going to go out with a bit of Blur.
A bit of Blur. All right. Okay.
Song number five.
Anyway, signing off. Three Blokes, No Clue.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys. Cheers. It's a bit of an intro, this.
Probably should have vetted that one. Should have vetted this.
Yeah,
yeah.
Fuck the giants.
Well done.
Well done. Peace out.
See you. Bye.